Hi, my name is Jim. I'm an addict. So, staying clean and living dirty, you know, I actually chose that topic when Tommy asked me, you know, would I do a workshop and which one? And so I chose the one that I had the more experience with, unfortunately. One thing I can say about staying clean and living dirty is not for long, you know. Like, I can't do both. My experience is that I couldn't do both. But I did it for quite a while. I'll try and share a little bit about, you know, because I got to take up a whole half hour. I don't know how I'm going to do that. But growing up, you know, my dad was a compulsive gambler from Jersey. My mom was a Catholic codependent from Ohio. And, you know, we moved around a lot, sometimes in the middle of the night, you know, because rent was due. So, I don't know. I went to, like, you know, I think it was 6 different grade schools, 3 different high schools. You know, we just moved a lot. And, you know, I was always, like, new kid fitting in. I was small, skinny, you know, and never felt like I could fit in, that I had to be more than I had to somehow be more than I was. And we didn't communicate a whole lot at home. You know, looking back, I can see that, like, you know, I understand why I felt the way I did. It was like I was supposed to figure out what they were, like I was supposed to be Karnak somehow. Oh, you want this, you know, and figure out what it was. And if I didn't figure out what it was I was supposed to do or what you were thinking, then I was stupid. You know, oh, how can you be so stupid? You know, and never quite good enough and this and that. And so, like, I was obsessive compulsive with stuff long before I ever picked up drugs. You know, usually it was sports, right? I would get into some sport and then try so hard to win some approval. And if I couldn't be the very best at it, you know, then I didn't get any kind of acknowledgement from my father, who I was looking for the approval from. And so I would quit like that. Done, you know, and on to the next one, you know, and on, and didn't really, you know, I experimented a little, but didn't really use until, like, you know, when I was 17, I had the chance to, like, graduate. I had enough high school credits in my senior year, so I joined the Navy at 17, because I needed to get out of the house. I needed to, and I loved the Navy. I loved it a lot because they told you exactly what to do. You didn't have to guess. And they didn't really want you to do too much, and they gave you a lot of pat on the back. Like, good job. Good job. Oh, this is great. You know. And back then, that was 1978. You know. 1978, and their slogan was, it's not just a job. It's an adventure. And I'm like, yeah, I'm down for that, you know. And so, at the end of boot camp, and I forget, I think boot camp's, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, you know, they have this big party, right? And they rented out 2 suites at the Holiday Inn down in San Diego for this big party, that we all were throwing in money for the entire book. And one suite was weed and drugs, and the other was, like, both of them had alcohol, but the other one was strictly alcohol. And so, like, I went to one room, check out the other room. I go into the dope room, right, and start doing that. And what? Lo and behold, I finally found something that I was really good at. I was like a natural, you know, you know, guys were falling out and stuff. I'm going, oh, keep going, let's go. And I was off and running because I got approval. You know, I got acceptance. I got approval. Oh, man. That's, you know, and I continued to use as much and as often as I can until at like 5 years and 9 months on a six-month enlistment, I mean a six-year enlistment, 5 years and 9 months in, I got thrown out for, other than honorable discharge for using drugs. You know, I got out and I didn't know what to do, and I was, you know, I was really angry. F you, you don't know what I could do my job better. You know, it started out like I was on a submarine, a nuclear power submarine, you know, and I started out like, oh, I'll only use like when we're in port. And then, like, you know, not, you know, I won't use underway. And then, well, I won't use while I'm on watch. Every one of them, you know. Because I was, like, in this little room that was locked with a key and accommodation because of the stuff that I was doing. And it had great ventilation. You know? I mean... The submarine's an enclosed atmosphere. You know, that smoke is going somewhere. There's people running all around looking, where is it? You know, but, you know, I got out, I got married, I had a kid, I kept using. And my wife at the time... I remember saying, she said, like, I just don't want to do this anymore. That's all we do. I just want to stop. I said, okay, baby, we can stop. We'll stop. And in my head, exactly what I was thinking is, I don't have to share anymore. Oh, she'll never know. You know, and, well, after that divorce, you know, that was my first divorce, and then like all bets were off, you know, and it wasn't long after that I started doing another substance, you know, crystal meth. I used to like to do crystal meth, I said, because like I could stay up longer and smoke more dope, you know. Anyway, after wrecking yet another car, you know, this one. Didn't even belong to me. It was a work van. Totaled it. You know, I came to this point where, like, you know, I wanted to stop. I really, really wanted to stop. You know, the problem was that I still was holding. After the car wreck, I had, like, had my sister run me around over here to this dope house, that dope house, get this, get that. Dropped me off at work because, you know, I had a bag of clothes and I had the key to the shop, you know, and I could, like, you know, I was sleeping under the workbench and I was using and I wanted to stop and I wanted to flush it down the toilet and I couldn't. And I knew that I was going to use it all. Because I knew that I couldn't stop, but I could run out. I knew how to run out, you know. And I don't know if there's anybody else here, like, you know, whoever, like, used crying, you know, weeping. There's no more party. There's no more good time. There's no more, you know. And that is when I found Narcotics Anonymous, you know, you know, I didn't go through, you know, sometimes I feel so different in this fellowship because, like, you know, I didn't go through treatment or rehab or ordered by the court or anything like that. I just, like, like I said, my dad was a compulsive gambler, and at one time he had found like some recovery for himself in GA. And that night after I had wrecked the car and stuff, the work van, and I actually called my dad, which was like, you know, not a, you know, we did not have a great relationship, and it was like 3 in the morning, and oh, you need to go to Narcotics Anonymous, click. And to this day, you know, my dad has passed, but that is the very best thing that my dad ever did for me. You know, the most loving thing he ever did for me. You know, but right away when I got here, I started feeling like, you know, less than, different. You know, because I didn't do heroin. Right? And my clean date was, my original clean date was 3/18/95. You know, March 18th, 95. I picked that day because, like, the way I was using, I really didn't know. I didn't keep track of days that well. I was up for long periods of time, and I had lost track of the days. And March 18th is the day after St. Patrick's Day. And so I was pretty sure I was clean on the day after St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, I started going to meetings, and at first I couldn't understand, you know, I didn't know a lot of things. What it says in our readings is like, you know, until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. Back then, we didn't really have the step working guide yet, and so, you know, we had to do steps out of the basic text, and the other book that you had to buy was a dictionary. At least my sponsor, Al, said you can get a dictionary. So I had to look up words like despair, you know. And the definition that I'll always remember is that despair is the loss of all hope. You know, using and crying, it's like the loss of all hope. And I got here and I did not care at all for myself. I didn't get clean for, you know, I just wanted to die so bad, but I had that 7-year-old son and I couldn't look him in the eye anymore. You know, because he loved me. You know, and I loved him, and I would tell him, go play Nintendo, Daddy's busy. You know, and like, I only got to see him a short period of time, and I would like blow him off, you know. And then when those feelings come back and they start, man, I was just like, you know, I was devastated. And I did not realize what it was or any. I didn't know that what I was getting when I went to those meetings was hope. Because I didn't have, you know, I couldn't feel, I didn't think I was worth any kind of hope. You know, I didn't think I was worth anything. So, you know, I kept coming back, you know, I got a sponsor, I started working steps, you know, I picked this guy, Al, because he said at the podium one time, he said, I can tell when somebody is just talking the talk or when they're walking the walk. And I said, oh, please be my sponsor because I'm so full of shit, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, and so Al was my sponsor, and I started working steps, and I did 1, 2, and 3, and then, like, you know, for my 4-step assignment, you know, what he said was, you know, write your life story. That was my assignment, and I don't know how many times I started and stopped, you know. And the other thing was, like, you know, shortly after, about 90 days into my recovery, I got into a relationship, you know, and he was not down with that. And I'm thinking, dude, I was married for 10 years before. You've never had a fucking girlfriend for 3 months. What are you going to tell me about relationships? You know, but I couldn't tell him that because I knew it would hurt his feelings, and I was too afraid to hurt his feelings. You know, and so that actually built like a little wall between us that got bigger. You know, because If you cannot be completely honest with your sponsor, I tell my guys all the time, if you can't be completely honest, you know, you can, it's okay to hurt my feelings, you know, then it won't work, you know. And so what happened is, like, you know, like, I kept starting and stopping. I never finished the four-step. Al got hep C. He got real sick. Back then there was just interferon. He moved to California. We drifted apart, and I had a sponsor in name only. I was going to meetings. I was staying clean, but I was not working steps. At 6 years, you know, my life, just doing those things, my life improved drastically. That woman I was in a relationship, we got married, we had a child, we bought a house, got a car, all that stuff, you know, all the stuff, right? You know, and I was making more money than I ever made in my life, and my job sent me to, like, Batesville, Indiana for, like, a sales thing they wanted me to. And when I was there in Batesville, Indiana, you know, I looked for, like, Narcotics Anonymous. We didn't have cell phones or internet back then. I looked in the white pages in the phone book, and I didn't see it. So the next day I went to the bowling alley, and then the next day I was tired of bowling, and so I went to the bar. I was going to shoot pool. I'm shooting pool. I'm drinking club soda and lime for three, and I'm thinking, why am I paying $3.25 for fucking club soda and lime? You know, I can have one beer. I can have one Bud Light. One Bud Light is not going to kill me. You know, 6 years clean. And in the meantime, not only had I stopped working steps, but I had done less meetings, less service, all the things that you've heard about a thousand times before. This is something that, like, you know, I say I feel a part different from so many times. Like, there's a jillion addicts who've done this shit, you know, and so I used, right? And then as soon as I took that first sip, my head told me, oh, you did it now. You might as well have another, right? And so, yeah, give me one of those. I'll take one. I haven't had one of those in 6 years. And before you know it, I was, you know, you don't drink for that long. What used to be just like a beginning was like I was wasted. I was dented the car and stumbling and hungover. And that was the extent of my relapse in terms of using. People ask me, like, how long was your relapse? Oh, define that, man. Because the thing was, that happened in Batesville, Indiana, like 1,000 miles away from Phoenix. I was alone and nobody knew. I hadn't been working a program, and I thought, I don't have to tell. I learned my lesson. I don't have to tell anybody. I don't have to tell anybody. I can. I just don't, you know. And so I didn't. And that's where I get into, like, the staying clean, living dirty. You know, because I kept that secret for 4 years. 4 years. Okay? I went to meetings. I didn't use. Still didn't have a sponsor. I still didn't work steps. Clean? Maybe. Recovery? No. There's a difference between clean time and recovery. I paid the price to learn. You know, I paid the price of, like, what happens, like, when you finally tell your wife, yeah, I relapsed like 4 years ago, you know. There's a price to pay for, like, keeping that secret, and I couldn't keep it anymore. And what really got to me was, like, this guy who had asked me to, like, temporarily sponsor him, and he was having trouble staying clean, and it was with alcohol, and it just tore at me. Like, how can I tell this guy if I'm, you know, with this lie? It just got so bad. And finally, I told my sponsor at the time, and then I told my home group, and then I told my wife. You know, I had to tell my sponsor first, you know. And once I said, once I told the first person, then it was easy. And you know, I was so sure that like people were going to like judge. Man, they did not care. You know, that's good. Okay, keep coming back. Glad you're here. I was all twisted. Yeah. It's like, shit, I could have done this 4 years ago. You know. But at the time, what was happening at the time, over those 4 years, even though I was going to meetings and not using, you know, I weighed like 240, I think. You know, I got real heavy. I was just waiting for my wife to leave me, you know. We weren't, you know, our relationship had was not good, you know. I was just waiting for her to leave me, just waiting to get fired from that job, you know, so that I could get on to the bitter end, you know. And what happened was I had another sponsor. He got sick with Hep C. You know, but he got a liver transplant. And he got a liver transplant on his clean date anniversary, which kind of like, you know, gave him a huge God shot, right? You get a liver on your clean date, you know. So after he recovers from his liver surgery, he called me, which was really strange because, like, he's one of those guys, like, it's your job to call me. I don't call you, you know. But he called me and he said, are we going to do this thing or what? Meaning the steps, you know, and that's what it took for me, you know, to work the steps. Staying clean and living dirty, I did it for 4 years until it almost killed me, you know. And I know of a lot of people who have, like, you know, kind of fibbed about their clean time or whatever, but I ain't never seen anybody do it for 4 fucking years, you know. So give yourself a break. If you're carrying around a secret, you know, staying clean and living dirty is just another way of saying lying through your teeth. You know, find somebody that you can tell the truth to. Because without being able to do that, for me, I know that I cannot work a program of recovery. There's nothing I can do other than suffer, you know, and there's no need for it. One of the things in the Living Clean, old timers say that there is nothing sadder than an addict with a high tolerance for pain, because it's unnecessary. You know, I don't know, is that a half hour there? It's close. Okay, I did it. So thank you for sticking around and listening to me.
Thank you so much, Jim. Our next speaker is going to be Ray Ray from Bullhead City.
That was good, Jim. I loved it. My name's Ray, and I'm an addict. You get kind of excited when I want to speak, but then because it just short circuits and it's going to go in waves, you know. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me. Actually, I'm a substitute and a friend of ours who's been part of my recovery since I moved to Bullhead, Arizona, and she always pushes me into everything. Service, being connected, all that crap, you know. And it's sort of been like a love-hate relationship, but I really, truly love her, you know. And she makes me get out of my comfort zone a lot, and that's pretty awesome, you know. Thanks, I enjoyed it. I had a memory, yeah. So for me, Narcotics Anonymous is the laughter and the head nods are recognition. You know, my perception has changed from when I first got here. You know, it's so different now. Like the cat standing here is not the cat that walked in here. 5 years and 8 months ago. You know, I want to share on this memory real quick because it touches home. You know, and I don't know if I should start here, but that's where it's going to happen. You know, so somewhere in the 90s, because I have a really large gap. You know. And if somebody says something, it'll trigger a memory, you know. I was in Batesville, Indiana, working for General Electric, okay. And at this point, it was heroin, and I was on methadone, and we went to the bar. We went to eat, and the bar was right there. And I don't remember the rest of the trip. That I could say for sure, you know. I didn't think that I had blackouts until I came here this time around, you know, and it's a trip. So, okay, where should we start at the beginning, you know? I grew up in a loud, obnoxious Italian home, and what I mean by loud, everybody is your uncle and your cousin and your aunt, and everybody's always there, and it's excruciating loud, you know. I mean, they're just loud people. And it was filled with violence, and we grew up with the iron fist, maybe you want to say, right? We got beat for everything, you know. And the beatings became excessive. What I learned after I got clean was that they were sick too. You know, they were alcoholic, and there was some mental illness going on. And what I learned was hurt people, you know. And that starts my road off, you know. I got to play sports, and I got to play football and wrestle, and I got to hurt you and not go to jail, you know. That was super cool, I thought. It was my outlet, you know. And then... started using reefer and beer in the summer going into fifth grade, and I felt different from everybody all the time. I felt different from everybody in my family, and for a long time I was the only guy that was using in my family, you know. And I would try and control it. Like, we had to sign a thing during football and wrestling that I wouldn't do alcohol, you know, the little contract back then, you know. And so I would wait until the weekend, drink, and go into practice on Monday, and I was all good, you know. And then when those two sports were over, they were the first two sports of the year. After that, I was off and running, you know. I was never home. I always was running from home, you know. I like to call it over the fence, you know. It was so strict that when I had a chance to leave the house, I never went back, you know. And I didn't find any kind of peace unless I was high, you know, or if I was doing something that I wasn't supposed to be doing, you know. Fast forward, I find cocaine, and I do that for like 18 years, and I go to my first rehab, and all the slogans that we have here, I hated them all, you know. I hated all of you guys. You guys were laughing, and seemed like you had your life together, and you guys would say, I'm John Doe, and I got 22 years, and I'm like, absolutely not. I can't get 22 minutes. I don't know anybody that's not high, you know. I didn't believe any of you guys, you know. So I get forced into the first rehab, you know, with the family deal. And I get 119 days, and I'm at this party, and they're all clean, you know. So it's like my first social event clean, right? And so this woman is there, and she's I'm with my ex, and this woman's there, and she's talking about the rocks, the crystals, and the moon. And I come from a very narrow point of view back there. I worked in plants and warehouses, you know. I was not up for the moons and the crystals and all that. And I had looked at my ex, and I was like, what the hell are we doing here, you know? So we got on a bike and left, and I got high with her that night. And I went to work midnights, and I went back to the neighborhood because, you know, after that it just rides by itself, you know. And I blow up my face at work. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I can't stop bleeding. And one of the guys that I rode with, he comes in the morning, and it's like 3:30 in the morning, and he's like helping me clean up all the blood. It just won't stop. And he's like, give me your skull can. And he puts these three little lines on there, and I'm like, that's not fucking cocaine. He's like, just do it. So I'm up for anything at this point, you know, at this point in my life, you know. And I snorted it, and I'm sitting in a stall there, and I was like, holy shit. And I remember sitting in a stall thinking that this was a gift from God, who I never even addressed from the time I was a young little Catholic kid, you know. And I thought this was a gift from God. But what I realized after I got clean, another 17 years of heroin, is that the only thing that was on my mind was heroin. I thought it was super cool that I only had one thought finally in that stall. You know, all the other noise disappeared. And then I only had one thought, and I didn't know it was heroin. You know, that was the only thing I thought of for 17 years. You know, 8 years later, I come out of my last rehab married, and she comes to the family day, and she says, if you don't go to a 90-day rehab or a 90-day halfway house and get some kind of structure in your life, I'm going to file these papers. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go. You know, so they let me out on Monday morning, and I go straight to the city. Then I go to the halfway house, you know. And they tell me, you know, pound sand, brother, hit the bricks. And I don't go home until it's almost dark, and all the locks are changed, And I remember backing out of the driveway and riding down my block, and I'm like, I'm free, you know. And nearly a decade later, I realize I'm not free, you know. It's that's how life works, you know, for me. I don't do anything in moderation, anything from drugs to food to nicotine to the vaping deal. You know, I've had a couple of people in the room here that I vape with, and they're like looking at me like I'm insane. You know, I don't do anything the right way, you know. And when I talk about like gaps in my memory, you know, it's the truth, guys. Like I have missing months of my life, you know, years, some of them. I moved out here in February of 15 from Chicago. I took off in February. We had 19 inches of snow on the February 1st, and that's the proverbial straw. And I go put in my notice 2 days later, and I leave before Valentine's Day, and I don't remember the trip out here except for a few things, you know. It's snowing in every state by this time, you know, and I'm stuck in a snowstorm in Oklahoma City, and it's just driving, you know, and I'm in a gas station. I pull off at the only exit without a hotel, and I got everything I own in this Fiat, you know, and I was a little bit smaller at that time, but not much, you know, And I'm cramped in this little Fiat, and I hear a guy's voice from my very first rehab. Another one of those things that I hated, you know. And the way he said it made it worse, you know. It kicked in the rest of the shit that I have to work on, you know. He said, my name's John Doe, and I'm addicted to everything that makes me feel good and everything that doesn't make me feel. And I turned around, and there's nothing there but a fucking snowstorm, you know. So now at this point of my life, I'm hearing voices. I'm talking to myself. And I think, you know, what the hell am I doing here, you know? And shortly after that, my ex is calls me on the phone, and she's like, you know that check you've been waiting on? It's been on your son's dresser for 3 weeks. He thought he had free money, you know, and I'm like, okay, that's how that goes. And turns out I had to sell my bike to fund the trip, and this is where part of I'll tie the higher power in, you know, where you guys would say God's doing for you what you can't do for yourself, and I would be like, you motherfucker, you know, and like, how the fuck does that make sense, you know? Well, it makes sense for me is after I get to Arizona, I have nothing but addicts in this little Fiat. For the first 2 years of my recovery, we drive to every meeting. I was fortunate enough to still have the car. Nobody else had a car. My sponsor didn't have a car. All the people I hung out with didn't have a car. So we were in that car for 2 years. And when you're sharing all your stories, you know, I don't even realize that I'm doing a four step. You know, I had no idea. So there wasn't no fear for me to do the four step, you know, because I had gone to a meeting, and when your mind starts to get open, you start to recognize, like, oh my God, that's part of my story, you know. Life has changed so much from that point, you know. Kind of short-circuited, and I'm having trouble here, but staying focused. It's kind of my thing, you know. I kind of jump around a lot, you know. But hold on. I was taught an honest share rings true, you know. So when I stay here, stand up here, and I tell you, like, I didn't believe any of you guys, you know. I bounced in and out for 17 years. You guys would say some of those things, and I would just disregard whatever you had to say. And somewhere from that trip, not even remembering the trip, like, my clean date is March 1st. I don't remember leaving Chicago a couple of days except for a few things. You know, I remember talking to myself. I remember not having any hope. And I remember hearing a song on the radio that says, it's going to be all right, because even in the darkness, you can still see the light. And it was like one of my biggest doghead moments on my recovery. I was like, what the fuck did he just say? You know? And I would click the radio for another what seemed like days, but it was only a few hours. And I heard the line again, and I was like, wow, that's trippy. You know, like, how does that happen? And it happens because I have a higher power in my life that's been watching out for me. I sell the bike to fund a trip, and I no longer feel like I can go to the other places that we find, you know. And I'm surrounded by addicts 24/7. And it was the first time in my life that I recognized that I surrendered to the program. You know, I started doing step work. I got the sponsor like you guys suggested. I got connected like you guys said to do, you know. Because when I left Chicago, I know a lot of people. You know, I did all the stuff like living dirty, you know. I did all that crazy stuff. I ran all the pools and the strip cards we stole everything that wasn't tied down, you know. And I don't do that here, you know. The first 2 years of my recovery, I spent with you guys almost 24/7. And to this point, I have never gone into a bar by myself, you know. I don't steal, you know. I don't lie to you guys. I'm the last one to know that about my behavior. You guys tell me about my behavior, you know. I'm aware of it, but I don't know how I'm acting out on it, you know. I learned to be a better person in my life from you guys. You guys taught me that I need to change only one thing, and that was everything. And when I first heard that, I was like, they're fucking talking crazy, you know. And like who has to do that? Change one thing, it's everything. You know, I had no idea people, places, and things was my worst enemy for the first 17 years. You know, I had no idea. I thought I could go back. I thought I could go back and sit on the porch there on Winchester Avenue and fit in, you know. When I didn't realize it's easier for them to take me out than for me to take them in, you know. Because every little bit of clean time, and it was just abstinence, because I didn't work nothing for 17 years. Sponsor in name. I didn't do any steps. But when I moved to Arizona, I started to do the steps. And I realized all the crazy stuff that I did. And I realized that I was crazy on the drugs. And when I'm not on the drugs, the crazy's a little less. You know, it's still crazy. But the degrees are a little less, you know. And you guys point my behavior out to me, you know. And I'm not mad at you guys today, you know. I asked Jim if he would go first because I always need like a jump start. I can't share first in a meeting. I need to be jump started, and I wish he can go again because I need a jump start, you know. What I know today is I did a little reflecting. I shared last night in a meeting and like towards the end of the meeting, and I shared on the things that I'm lacking in my recovery today, you know. Right now I'm lacking the willingness to be entirely ready, you know. I feel like I go through waves, like when I first get here, excuse me, and they would talk about the degradation, you know, and the despair, and you hit on that line that still resonates in my head every time I hear it, you know. In desperation, we sought help through the people in Narcotics Anonymous, because when I got here, I was desperate, you know. I had nothing. I was homeless, you know, hunched over walking into the meeting and gray, you know, and full of darkness and hate for and disdain for everybody, you know. And what it turns out was I didn't love myself. So my people that are here supporting me today, I have latched onto them like crazy, and I don't let them go today. I don't walk away from anything today, you know, and that wasn't the story. Like, you know, I walked out of my life to go sit on the porch, and I don't do that today, you know. Half of my recovery, I've either been injured in surgery or near death, you know. I threw a blood clot in my hand, or actually in my wrist, and I thought I fractured just these two fingers here, you know. And I'm sitting with my best friend here, you know, and I'm like, she's like, I don't think that's broke. It's purple, you know. I'm like, I've tried to justify it because I was taking care of my father, and I was driving him to hospice in Vegas to see my stepmother, who I have a relationship after not knowing them for years. You know, she was the woman he left the house for. And I have this really good relationship, and I want to make sure that they're okay, you know, that he sees her in case she goes, no matter if I was sick or not, you know. And the pain was so great in my hand that, you know, believe it or not, I knew I was in trouble, but I tried to convince myself that it wasn't as bad as it was, you know. That I had to take care of my dad, who invited me to his home 5 years or 3 years earlier to get clean and to help them with their illnesses. And it was at the end of their illnesses where my body had given out. And I tried to rationalize that helping them would be better. You know, I didn't really care if I lived at that point at 3 years still. Kind of hard to say, you know, because I wanted to die every minute of every day prior to that, and I didn't realize that being 3 years clean, I still wanted to die. I didn't care if I died, and I justified it by thinking I was doing the right thing finally, you know. And And that's my truth, you know. So I'm going to one of our, we live in a small area, and one of our ladies dies from cancer, and we're going to her infinity thing, and I get my dad dressed in the morning, somewhere around 10 or 11, and it's 5 o'clock before I make the call and say, I can't get dressed, I'm not going to make it, because I have no energy. I don't really know what's going on at this point. So my friend comes over, and I haven't been to a meeting in 3 weeks at this point. I go to the meeting, and she stays with my dad. And while I'm at the meeting, she gets everything ready, gets him in a car. When I come home, they take me straight to the hospital, you know. And at this point, I've kind of whittled down all the people, and I only have like 3 people in my life, you know. And 2 of them are there to take care of me and my dad and take us to the hospital. And it turns out I'm in AFib, and I got a blood clot, and I'm purple from my hand, and yellow and black, and I'm purple up to here, and I don't even know it, you know. And then the other friend gets my dad into a facility while I'm in the hospital. And I'm there for 7 days, and they do 2 procedures, and it doesn't really work, and they let me out, and my hand is still, like, pale purple, you know. And the pain is still there, like pain I never felt before, you know. Because now I'm into my 4th week of my hand losing its life, you know. It turns out I have AFib and congestive heart failure, and the whole time I thought I just had asthma. You know, and I come out on a Sunday, and I go see my dad, and he's in a place that he doesn't really need to be. He needs more care than that. So I feed him, I tuck him into bed, and I tell him I'll be there in the morning. And at 6 o'clock, I get a call that he's passed. So the friend that got him in the facility, she rides with me on Tuesday to see my stepmother in hospice, and her family is telling me the whole time I'm in the hospital, she's doing well and she's recovering and she looks really great, you know. And when I get there, if anybody's, I'm sure there's people here that have seen family members die, you know. She's gray and shriveled up and she can't speak and she looks helpless. And I share with her that dad has passed and she doesn't respond to me, but she stares deep into me, you know. I go to the meeting in Vegas, and we leave there at 3:30, and we go eat, and we go to the meeting. As we're walking into the meeting, I get the call. She's passed away, like 30 hours later. So 3 days later, I go back to the hospital because I can't take it anymore, and now I'm in the hospital for 13 days, and they I survived, but I don't know anything. You know, I've been in the hospital like 20 days, and I don't know. I don't have a clue, you know. I don't have a clue about my own behavior at this point, you know, because they got me pumped full of everything. And it's kind of off topic, but that's the truth, you know. It's the truth, you know. So if I fast forward to today, you know, I don't go to the bars anymore. And I surely don't go by myself anywhere. I didn't go see a concert, but we go with our people. We roll in deep, we bowl, and I'm with our people, you know. And that's never been the case. I was always solo, you know. And sitting there in Inglewood, you know what I'm trying to say, right? I'm the only guy on the porch, and the cops are driving by going, you know. Sitting there with a bald head, hanging out, I'm all good. You know? I'm with my people. They were not my people. You guys are my people. You know, I can be up here scattered and feeling vulnerable, and you guys understand it. You know, life is good today, better than it's ever been. But we had the learning days, and I heard this one guy say, how free do I want to be? How free do you want to be? And that's like 4 months ago, and I've stopped. I've been like on a stall pattern, you know, for 4 months, eating my face off, you know. I lose 25 pounds. I gain 15 pounds back in 3 months, you know, and not really willing to progress, you know. That's the truth here, right? It goes in waves. Recovery comes in waves for me. Sometimes I'm all about it. And other times I just want to sit because, oh, this is the most comfortable I've ever been, and life is good, and this committee is really not firing up. It fires up every night at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's a big old party up there, you know. I still sleep like shit, except if I'm in a room full of people and it's all loud, I'm all good. Slept my ass off last night, you know. Almost was late today, you know. I'm just grateful to be here, and Narcotics Anonymous has changed my life. Like, I didn't like the topic, but I took it, you know, because you guys said you just show up, don't say no, you know. I wanted the topic with the incredible life. Like, my life is fucking incredible today versus where I came from and the 17 years of heroin and 18 years of cocaine. Life is good today, you know. I can smile and laugh, and I become one of the guys I used to hate. You know, I laugh and giggle through the whole friggin' meeting, you know, and people are like, you know, I become one of the guys that the new people hate, you know. You know, it's like, why is he so happy? Man, because I have been blessed, you know. I'm still alive when I should be dead. We've all done things where we should be dead, you know. And even in recovery, I should have died. You know, and I'm still standing here looking at smiling, warm faces, you know, and all the head nods. Well, your face is not smiling, you know. You know? But life is good today. Like, I can't begin to explain the gratitude I have in my heart. I went from a hopeless dope fiend. God, are you fucking kidding me? You know? Life is good today. I feel good up here. I feel charged and energized. We came in last night, and I've been nothing but charged up. I couldn't wait for it. Like, I wanted it to be canceled because I'm trying not to live in fear, but I'm compromised, you know? I don't even think about that on a regular basis until I have to be in a room full of people, you know? Like, I only go. There's like two or three of us hanging out. That's it. You know? And except for when I go bowling, and then I kind of make it a joke, you know, where you can wear your mask. You have to wear it at the score table, but if you're on the approach, that force field is stronger over there. four feet away. It's not 6 feet away. You know, I think it's the COVID thing. Like, I have mixed feelings on it, but I use the tools that we have today, you know, for the most part, you know, and that included the Zoom, which I didn't really like because I have boycotted the 21st century, you know. Anything technological, I'm not big with, you know. I was a laborer for my whole life, you know. I worked hard, and this other stuff seems too easy, you know. So I use the tools today, even including the Zoom, and I'm not real comfortable with it because I don't think you get the same effect when you're connected again. Like, come on, guys. I'm connected for the first time in my life after I wasn't even connected when I was married. You know, and had my children. I didn't feel connected to them like I feel connected to you guys. And that's the miracle in my life today, you know. So I know for me, part of living dirty is not being entirely ready to keep moving forward, you know. You guys know what's going on in my head before I can even have the courage to say it, to share it. My car ride up here yesterday was... it's one of the best days of my life. You know, we joked around, and most of the jokes were about me, you know. And I kind of, and it's the truth, you know, and I don't get mad today. You could laugh at me today, or because most of the time it's you're laughing with me because I know how crazy, you know, I walk right into the stupid shit today, you know. And it's like, you know, like I've never thought that I could stand up here and laugh at myself or have any of you guys laugh at me, because that wasn't the case, especially not sitting there. You know what I mean? You know, everything was sarcastic, and you had to cut somebody to the quick, and that ain't my life today. And for me, that's living clean today. You know, that's a miracle in my life. Just even to be standing here without being high, you know, it's awesome. Sorry I went over. You know, I'm Ray. I'm an addict. I'm addicted to everything that makes me feel good and everything that doesn't make me feel. And you guys make me feel good today, so I'm good with that. Yeah.